Here we are. We're continuing on into our conversational expositions, but now we're beginning a new phase of it. Before, we were talking about Exodus chapters 21, 22, and 23, the section where the laws were given to the judges of Israel. Now we go into this section covering over broadly four chapters, 25 through 28, where Moses receives instructions on how to build the tabernacle. And so we're going to do basically the same thing. Take it apart piece by piece and consider it section by section. Let's just jump right into it. The first part of the text, Exodus chapter 25, verses 1 and 2.
It says, "Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel that they may bring me an offering. From everyone who gives it willingly, with his heart, you shall take my offering."
Okay, kind of interesting. Right at the get-go, we're not going to belabor a lot because I spoke about this on a recent Sunday. But before he ever asked him to build anything, he instructs him to take the offering. This was very important to God. And to me, it just kind of speaks of this great need of how our the need for us to give isn't only because there's a need. The real need to give is within us to be generous givers, more so than it is just for a specific need, such as building the tabernacle.
It really is a heart matter.
Yes.
Generosity, it starts from within. A lot of times we do, like you said, it's just we need a purpose to give to, or we need a cause to give to, but God says, no, just give because of what I've given to you, or by my example, or because of my generosity, you should emulate that and give and be generous yourselves.
I think about that passage where it says that we're to be conformed into the image of his son, and that's Jesus, isn't it? I mean, he's a giver. He's a generous God towards us.
And the whole idea, we mentioned a recent Sunday about God cares about devotion, about worship,
yes.
Not just simply obedience like a robot. No, he desires this intimate devotion.
You would have thought that Moses went up on Mount Sinai because, we should have set that scene. I almost apologize to our audience. This is transacting while Moses is up on Mount Sinai.
Right.
Joshua is somewhere near, but Moses is meeting with the Lord. And instead of God giving him more laws for the people to obey, God speaks to Moses about this tabernacle that they're to build for worship. And the worship begins with their giving.
It does.
That's remarkable.
And it's like you mentioned again, it's bring me an offering.
Right.
You know, this is God's offering.
The offering belongs to God.
Yeah.
Doesn't belong to the pastor, doesn't belong to the elders, doesn't belong to the congregation.
Yeah.
Belongs to God, and it should be managed with that kind of heart, that kind of.
And I like the motive, just the willingness that God wants for us. That we're not guilted into giving, we're not obligated into giving, but we should be giving it out of a willful heart.
From everyone who gives it willingly,
yeah.
And of course, we see that repeated in the New Testament. Yeah. Okay, we talked about that on Sunday. Let's jump into the next couple verses, starting at verse 3.
Let's see. "And this is the offering which you shall take from them: gold, silver, bronze, blue, purple, and scarlet thread, fine linen, goat's hair, ram skins dyed red, badger skins, and acacia wood, oil for the light, spices for the anointing oil, and for the sweet incense, onyx stones, stones to be set in the ephod and in the breastplate."
All right, so here's a shopping list. Basically, get these materials from the congregation of Israel, from the nation, and use them to build what God is going to tell Moses to build, this place for worship, a sanctuary, a tabernacle.
Now, where were these items? I mean, they're in the wilderness. Where have these items, from Egypt, I guess?
From Egypt, yeah. When they came out of Egypt, remember, the Bible tells us that the Egyptians showered them with gifts and precious things. It ended up being legitimate back wages for the Israelites for all their years of slavery. But it was because the Egyptians were just so happy to see them go because they were tired of being plagued so much. So you have all of that at work in there. They came out of Egypt with an abundance of things, and now God asked them to give a portion of that.
Isn't it found that we have it here in the notes that it was estimated around $13 million
at least
they gave? That's staggering to me.
Yes, yes. It's kind of interesting, a $13 million building project right off the bat.
Yeah.
And you're talking about a substantial amount of material, too. What does it say in our notes? Something like more than 9 tons of material. So it's a lot. Now, as for these specific things and what they are and what they mean, we'll talk about that as we get to the application for each one. But here is just a big shopping list.
Mm-hmm.
So now, just to sort of wrap up this shorter first section that we're dealing with, let's take a look at verses 8 and 9.
says, and let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them, according to all that I show you, that is, the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all its furnishings, just so you shall make it.
This blows my mind on a lot of different levels. I mean, the first one, and the one that really kind of hit me, sort of funny, hit me while I was preaching on Sunday.
Right.
Just how strong it was that this wasn't Moses' idea to build a tabernacle for God. God initiated the building of the tabernacle because he wanted to dwell with his people.
Yeah.
That was very important to him. And that's a fascinating idea. Let them make me a sanctuary. The sanctuary was for God. It was for him and for his purposes.
But not only that, but for them to meet with him as well.
Yes, this meeting place with God.
A specific place, a special place. You know, God meets with us anywhere, you know, outside the walls of the church. But there's something special about when God's people gather in a specific place.
Yeah. Well, or at least there should be something
special. There should be something special.
Right? And that's how we should approach our church meetings. And those who have responsibility to lead church meetings really need to make sure that these are things that glorify the Lord and that there is something special, that there's a sense of meeting with God when God's people come together. Not merely a social or a cultural meeting. Otherwise, you know, you hear people say it, don't you? Well, I'm just as close to God out on the golf course as I am, you know, in church.
I'm at Campus Point surfing, shredding some waves, but God meets me here.
That's right. Well, okay, look, we hope somebody senses the presence of God in everything that they do. You know, when you're lining up that putt on the 18th green or when you're, you know, shredding that wave, doing that aerial at Campus Point or wherever, okay? We hope you sense it. But yet there is, or at least should be, something different about coming together with God's people.
Yeah. And it just shows God's heart. God's heart is desiring, wanting to be with his people.
He wants to connect with our lives. Yeah. He doesn't just want obedience. Mm-hmm. It's not like God just throws down a bunch of rules and says, here's the rules, keep them. I want to connect with your life, he says. That's pretty radical. It's something that people really kind of get lost in the mix sometimes.
And the idea that it was the idea of a pattern of a tabernacle, you know, the idea that there's something... This represented, this earthly was a representation of something heavenly.
That's huge. I mean, that's what the words say there in verse 9. The pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all its furnishings, just so you shall make it. Yeah. Moses was given a specific vision. By the way, I would emphasize the vision because it says there, all that I show you. I earnestly believe God didn't just give Moses a verbal description of what these things... But he gave them a vision. He gave Moses a vision of what it should look like. It was important to do it that way because there's a pattern. A pattern of what? What is the tabernacle a pattern of?
The pattern of the throne room of God, the heavenly courts of God. It's the pattern of what we will find in heaven when we go.
Wait. Are you telling me that this tabernacle was made to be an illustration or a shadow or a reflection of something that actually exists in heaven?
Yes. I mean, obviously, it's an imperfect one, and the one that we will see when we go into heaven will be far greater, far more glorious, far better than what we have here in the Bible. But it is. What we will see in heaven, this is a shadow of.
Well, that's what Hebrews says. I mean, here we got Hebrews 8. Now, this is the main point of the things we're saying. We have such a high priest, you know, speaking of Jesus here, who is seated at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in the heavens, a minister of the sanctuary and of the true tabernacle, which the Lord directed.
He's drawn all these images from the tabernacle, from the temple.
Then he says, for every high priest is appointed to offer both gifts and sacrifices. Therefore, it is necessary that this one also have something to offer. For if he were on earth, he would not be a priest, since there are priests who offer the gifts according to the law, who serve the copy and shadow of the heavenly things. As Moses was divinely instructed when he was about to make the tabernacle, for he said, see that you make all things according to the pattern shown you on the mountain.
That's pretty heavy.
Yeah.
What we have here in the tabernacle and its furnishings are things that correspond, just like you said, in an inferior degree, but they correspond to a reality in heaven. And so isn't this amazing? What we're going to be studying through these next conversational expositions is really, literally, it's a window into heaven. It shows us something about what heaven's like.
Yeah. And isn't that a good mentality as people watch these videos to keep that mentality in their minds, that this is a picture of what will be?
Right.
And so when we talk about all this, that they are picturing, okay, one day I'll see this in heaven.
Yeah. Well, you could say that we are preparing our people for heaven right here, for them to see the heavenly reality that they're going to come and meet.
So don't get bogged down with the details and the cubits and the brass rings. You know, we're going to explain it, but remember, it's just of things to come.
The big picture. Yeah. That's right. That this points to a heavenly reality, and that Jesus really performed something in the heavenly reality, just as the priest, and in particular the high priest, performed something in the. Okay, just before we leave now, I just want to ask one question that I'm just kind of anticipating some of our viewers. What's the relationship between the tabernacle and the temple? What is this?
Well, was the tabernacle more temporary in the sense like it was something that was they had to build and they were wandering in the wilderness?
Right.
The
it's temple, a tent. It's
a
it was
tent.
Meant to be portable. How many years? Do you guys know how many years the tabernacle existed? I mean, we're talking at least 500 years.
Wow.
So, I mean, it wasn't a
short-term thing. Because it came into the promised land.
It came into the promised land. All through the time of Judges. Mm-hmm. All through the reign of Saul, all through the reign of David, not until the reign of Solomon, the son of David, was there a temple built.
Wow.
But the temple replaced the tabernacle. Mm-hmm. The temple was built on the same concept as the tabernacle, just as a permanent building instead of a temporary
and
building.
Even a greater scale in Solomon.
Yeah, he kind of blew it up. Yeah, that's right.
Was that God's plan?
Well,
or was
you know,
that in
it's
the
kind
heart
of funny.
Of David?
I think so. I think it was in the. We're not told specifically. We're not told that God told David or Solomon make it bigger, but I think they just felt, how could we not? How could we not make it bigger? But that's just kind of the relation between the temple, the tabernacle, and then we actually have three things, don't we? We have the tabernacle, we have the temple, and then we have the heavenly reality. Those three things kind of all connect together on a chain. All right, good. Well, let's leave it off here. We'll pick it up starting at verse 10, talking about the first item that God speaks about in the tabernacle.